smash your brain in with the Bible, idiot. And I'm addicted to the serotonin rush.
When's enough enough, eh? When's enough enough, eh? Shit.
Just eat a Big Mac, you stupid bitch. Anymore. We're not allowed to make jokes. It's not funny. Sipping wine, having some pasta, having some pizza. Oh, I'm weird. I'm normal. I'm not normal, but I'm eccentric. I'm quirky. I'm original. All right, I'm an original.
One person raised his voice. Classroom couldn't believe it either. But in the end, he had logic on his side. And at the end of the day, he proved his point.
Feel like the Nero or Casino. Where they got the sun and for the casino. Don't sun it when you're growing on the ice. What you expect? Meet a girl, she be growing on the ice.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. It's going to be only America first. America first. The American people will come first once again.
Good evening, everybody. You're watching America First. My name is Nicholas J. Fuentes. We have a great show for you tonight. Very excited to be back here with you tonight on Thursday. We have a lot to talk about tonight, lots to get into. Big show. Lots to discuss, lots to talk about. Our featured story tonight, we will once again be talking about the Gaza War, Day 13. And like last night, there's no major developments. But there was a major address by President Joe Biden tonight from the Oval Office, where he pledged a further financial commitment to both Ukraine and Israel. So we'll talk about the statement, and we'll talk about the aid package. We'll also talk about the preparations that are being made for the war and what's being discussed behind closed doors. Apparently, they're saying that this is a war that is going to last years. That's what Israel has apparently told the Biden administration during their meeting yesterday, is that not only will the war go on, potentially, in Gaza for multiple years, but that it will require the sustained support from the United States. So we now have two dependents in a major ground war. We'll have Ukraine with no end in sight, and we'll also now have Israel. And we'll also be beginning to arm Taiwan, preparing for that war to pop off. So we'll be doing three all at the same time. And meanwhile, we don't have any money. So we'll talk about that. We'll also be talking tonight about the race for the U.S. House speakership. Haven't talked about it too much, but we're finally going to get into it. As you know, several weeks ago, Matt Gaetz forced Kevin McCarthy out of the position of Speaker of the House. He used the motion to vacate, which was a concession agreed upon at the beginning of the year when this Congress was seated. Ever since then, the House of Representatives has not been able to elect a new speaker. There has not been a Republican nominee who has been able to get a simple majority on the floor because they can get no consensus within the GOP. And so Kevin McCarthy said that he will not be seeking re-election for the speakership. Steve Scalise was put forward, he lost, and he exited the race. And now Jim Jordan has been put up as the nominee by the Republicans, but he's now lost two ballots. And as of earlier this evening, he will be attempting another vote. So we're without a speaker, and there's no deal in sight. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen. So we'll talk all about the speakership race and everything that's been happening. And that is going to be our show. Like I said, it's sort of a slower day. I kind of miss it. You know, last week, everything was popping off. We had this big Israel war. Nothing ever happens. It feels like Prigozhin all over again. Remember, we were supposed to get a civil war in Russia with the Wagner Group? And it just never happened. All day, they teased us with this, and then nothing happened. Then we were supposed to get a coalition war in West Africa against Niger. And it was supposed to be the West African Economic Group, Economic Community of West African States versus Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali. And it just never happened. We were supposed to get a major interstate coalition ground war in Africa, and it just never arrived. We were supposed to get a deal with Saudi Arabia. That's over. And last week, we were supposed to get an imminent ground invasion of Gaza with tanks and planes and everything. And instead, they're just killing a bunch of civilians and blowing up churches for no reason. So, whatever. That's how it goes. So anyway, so slower day today, but that's okay. Still some important things to discuss. Before we get into the news, I want to remind you to smash the follow button here on Cozy to get a push notification whenever I go live, cozy.tv/Nick. Also, follow me on Rumble, rumble.com/NickJFuentes. And you have to follow me on both because I'm live every night on both platforms. So check me out on Rumble and Cozy. And follow me on Telegram. The link is down below. Okay, so with that, I don't have anything major. You know, the last few days we've been going off on Charlie Kirk and Shapiro. Yesterday, I just couldn't even contain myself. Yesterday, I just popped off because I am so sick of the Jewish propaganda and these Jews endlessly talking about anti-Semitism and the Holocaust and Jew hater and this and that. I mean, I just popped off yesterday because I was pissed. Tonight, I'm not that pissed off. I'm relaxed. You know what I think it was? It was the fast. Pope Francis is calling for another fast next week. And I want to say, listen, I'm the number one Pope Francis respecter. And I know nobody loves me for that, but it's true. But I got to eat. Man, I'm hungry. This is a lot of fasting. There was a fast on, was it Monday? And now they're calling for another fast on the 27th. That's a lot of fasting. Niggas got to eat, man. I'm hungry. I don't know if I can handle all that fasting. I'm going to do something I'm going to regret. I have low blood sugar. Can I get a dispensation? I stop eating and I go a little crazy. And all this fasting, it's really throwing me. So the fast is over. I was eating a lot today. No, not really. I had a little McDonald's breakfast and then some Chick-fil-A for dinner, trying to watch my weight, you know. So I'm doing some healthier, I'm doing some healthy substitutions. For example, I was going to order a cheese pizza for breakfast, but I instead opted for the McDonald's breakfast tacos. And then tonight I was going to go out and get a few hot dogs and fries, but I said I'll actually go for the healthy option. I'll get the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, get a little chicken breast in my diet, you know. So had an Almond Joy. There's a little coconut in there. So I'm working on it. I'm trying to watch my weight a little bit and maintain my health. So anyway, no, it's jokes, of course. But anyway, so we'll dive in here because it's a lot to talk about. Specifically with the speakership race. We haven't talked about this at all, but this was the biggest thing that was going on several weeks ago. But we haven't had a chance really to follow up because so much has been happening in the Middle East. So I'd like to talk about that. Weeks ago, you may remember, there was a major battle in the House of Representatives over the speakership. But this is a battle that went on long before that. It's been going on all year and even into last year during the transition, shortly after the election. And so you may remember a few weeks ago, there was, to shorten the story, there was a major battle over what was called the continuing resolution. Government's running out of money. They needed 12 appropriations bills to pass. And these appropriations bills would fund the government for a year. But they couldn't get any agreement on what should be in there. So they needed to pass a stopgap measure called a continuing resolution that would fund the government from September 30th until the middle of November. They needed a 40-day extension, basically, so that they could finalize these big 12 appropriations bills. And so members of the House Freedom Caucus, led by Matt Gaetz, were pressuring Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House at that time, to pass a bill with serious demands from the Democrats in the Senate and from the White House on border security and for a suspension of military aid to Ukraine. But McCarthy didn't want to do that. McCarthy didn't want to give a bill that was too extreme. He wanted a very modest bill that didn't ask really any concessions from the Democrats. He wanted no HR 2, which was an immigration bill, no E-Verify. He wanted a little bit of money for border security and like a 9% spending cut. That was the big concession we were supposed to get. And as we talked about, that, of course, would be negotiated down. So whatever the final bill would be, it would be less than even that, which was nothing. And there had been frustration in the House Freedom Caucus for a long time, especially with McCarthy, because this is the same thing that he pulled earlier this year back in May. when the House of Representatives passed a deal that would raise the debt ceiling until 2025. That was another deal where we had a lot of leverage but extracted no concession. So this time, Matt Gaetz said that he would force a government shutdown if Kevin McCarthy would not bring to the floor a bill that had HR 2 and mandatory E-Verify, among other things. And just before the deadline hit, just before the government was about to shut down, Kevin McCarthy went around everybody's back, made a deal with the Democrats, and passed a so-called clean funding bill that had nothing for Republicans. Nothing. Nothing on the border, no spending cuts, nothing. And he did that effectively outflanking his own party in order to prevent a government shutdown. And the only way the Democrats would agree to bail him out is if he gave them everything they wanted, which he did. So after that, Matt Gaetz forced a vote of no confidence, which Kevin McCarthy failed. It's called the motion to vacate, which was agreed upon back in January. It can be brought to a vote with a single member. One member can invoke this motion. So McCarthy was removed, and ever since then, they've been looking for a new speaker. But we're back to where we were at the beginning of this year when Kevin McCarthy faced 15 or 16 ballots before he was able to win and take the speakership. And that's because the Republicans have such a slim majority. No Republican can get the 217 votes that are required on the floor in order to become the speaker, because Republicans only have a majority of 4 or 5 votes. And so they need a virtual consensus within the party to select a speaker. So this past week, they tried to have Steve Scalise become the replacement for McCarthy. He failed, which is a good thing because Steve Scalise was Kevin McCarthy's number two in the party leadership, in the congressional leadership, I should say. So he failed, and that's great because he is just as bad, maybe worse than McCarthy. So now they've put up Jim Jordan, who's far more conservative than both McCarthy or Scalise. He's not perfect, and he wouldn't be my choice, but he's better. So Jim Jordan's been put up to a vote, and now he's failed several times. And so today, the House of Representatives was going to come together on a deal that would keep the interim speaker. So since Kevin McCarthy vacated the post, they have had the pro tempore of the House of Representatives, which is the most senior member, step up and become the acting interim speaker. And so today, after Jim Jordan failed the vote, they said that they would just keep the interim speaker until January. His name is McHenry. But then that deal fell apart too. So Republicans couldn't pass the CR. They motioned to vacate McCarthy, so he was out. They put up Scalise, he failed. They put up Jim Jordan, he failed. Jim Jordan left the race, and they said that they would leave the interim speaker as a deal, but then that deal fell through. So now Jim Jordan is back in the race, and he's going to face another ballot tomorrow. In the meantime, he's trying to cajole 20 representatives into voting for him. And this is a story from, I think this is from New York Times. It says, quote, GOP Representative Jim Jordan's office said the third round of voting for House Speaker will take place tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. and that he will be holding a news conference 2 hours before that. The Ohio Republican is pressing on with his bid to become the next Speaker of the House after a plan he supported to temporarily empower the interim speaker was met with opposition from his fellow GOP lawmakers on Thursday. Republicans met on Capitol Hill to chart a path forward after Jordan fell short of the 217 votes needed to become speaker in the first 2 rounds of voting this week. Plans for a third vote today were abandoned, and Jordan told colleagues that he would support a proposal that would allow the speaker pro tempore, Patrick McHenry, to oversee the House until January while he remained in the race and tried to muster support. But that idea was met with stiff opposition from dozens of GOP lawmakers, and Jordan soon reversed course, saying he would instead move forward with another floor vote. He told reporters today, quote, "We made the pitch to members on the resolution as a way to lower the temperature and get back to work. We decided that wasn't where we're going to go. I'm still running for speaker, and I plan to go to the floor and get the votes and win the race. The Ohio Republican said he wanted to, quote, talk with the 20 individuals who voted against him so that we can move forward and begin to work for the American people. He met with the holdouts on Capitol Hill and said the party is trying to get unified as soon as we can, but there was no sign that he had changed any minds during the meeting. And here's the amazing thing about this whole situation. And here's why I like this style. I love the government shutdown. I love that they remove McCarthy. A lot of people are extremely critical right now of Matt Gaetz and extremely critical of the Republican Party because they say that removing McCarthy has created an untenable situation where now there's no speaker and now nothing can get done. And now it's turned into a complete circus where they're trying to get speakers, but they can't get them elected. And they say that this is a sign of dysfunction. But the reality is this. This is the first time, it seems, in Congress that a small contingent of MAGA Freedom Caucus members have been able to put the pressure on the establishment. And it's working. And by the way, it's going both ways. So much of this is psychological. And here's what I mean by that. Back in January, when Kevin McCarthy was initially elected to become the speaker, it was the same situation. Just like now, back in January, and even we knew this as early as November of 2022, there was no Republican in the House that could secure 217 votes. Nobody. Just like now. But McCarthy then, just like now, was able to get more votes than anybody, which is still true even today. Even though he was just removed, and although he's not running again, he would be able to command more votes if he were to run than Jordan or Scalise or anybody for that matter. And it was the same situation. Again, we knew this on election night, and we knew this in January when the first floor vote commenced for Speaker. What they told us back in January is that even though nobody wanted McCarthy, even though the base didn't want him, even though he's not that conservative, even though he was passed over in 2015 because of a sex scandal, and we got Paul Ryan, they said that we have to have him because he's the only one that can get the votes. No one else can come close, so no one should even try. We have to have a speaker, so we're going to jam Kevin McCarthy down everybody's throats. That's what they said. What are you going to do? Not have a speaker? And it was the same people leading the opposition to McCarthy back then. It was Gaetz, and it was his buddies. And sometimes it was five, and sometimes it was as many as 15 or 16. And it was the same thing with the continuing resolution. Sometimes they had four people voting against in the final one. I think they had 15 or 16 voting against. But it's the same story. But back then, they told the Freedom Caucus and the base, you have to accept McCarthy. We're going to jam him down your throat. There's no other viable option. You're going to have to live with it. And this is a selection, by the way, that the establishment wanted. McCarthy's the favorite of the party. He's the favorite of the donors, of Israel, of Saudi Arabia, of the establishment. He is the favorite. So make no mistake about it. That wasn't about pragmatism. That was the selection of the political establishment. So one way to look at January is this. The political establishment put the pressure on the base. And they said, look, voters, now that we have your vote, we know you don't want McCarthy, but he's the only one that can get it. And we're not going to not have a speaker. So this is how it's going to be. Our pick is going to be the speaker, and you'll have to deal with it. Matt Gaetz will have to make a deal, Biggs will have to make a deal, and you are just going to have to swallow another 2 years of rhino leadership in the House. And Republicans assented. They said, okay, fine, well, we can't not have a speaker. And the way to look at this is that not having a speaker is a form of pressure. It's a form of dysfunction that puts pressure on everybody. Because the longer the House goes without a speaker, the voters blame the majority, and government tends to become dysfunctional. Things shut down. And so the establishment was able to give that pressure to the base. They forced the pressure on the base and said, if you can't come up with a pick, then you don't have a right to object. You have to accept it. And the base said, oh, okay, like they always do. It's the same psychology of the election. They do the same thing in the election. The establishment puts up a terrible guy in the primary and says, you have to vote for this terrible guy. And Republicans say, well, I don't really like that guy. But the Republican Party says, well, who are you going to vote for, a Democrat? Putting the pressure on the base. No, okay, we won't vote for a Democrat. Fine, we'll vote for the terrible rhino that the establishment selected in the primary. It's the same psychology. Now, this time, it's a bit of a mirror image. And so McCarthy has been removed, and he has been made non-viable. He said that he's not going to run again, and he's been humiliated. This is the first time a speaker's been removed. It's the shortest tenure of a speaker in American history. So he is non-viable. Now the House needs a speaker. And the House said, well, we don't want Scalise either, because Scalise is just like McCarthy. So the House puts up Jim Jordan, who's actually a popular option. And again, he's not my favorite, but he's a popular option. Trump supports him. Gates supports him. A lot of people in the establishment like him. Jordan is a friend of McCarthy's. But now it's the political establishment this time. It's the Republican political establishment that says they will not accept Jim Jordan. And this is the rest of the story here from New York Times. Why will they not put Jim Jordan in? Why won't they give him the votes? The holdouts this time are coming from the establishment. In other words, back in January, it was the five Freedom Caucus people saying, we won't vote for McCarthy. We'll deny him the simple majority. This time, it's 20 institutionalists. It's 20 establishment Republicans saying, we won't vote for Jim Jordan. We will deny him the majority. And this is it from New York Times. It says, quote, in a remarkable reversal of roles, a group of roughly 20 veteran Republicans, including institutionalists and lawmakers in competitive districts, are flexing their muscles against Mr. Jordan's candidacy. Their choice to do so has prolonged an extraordinary period of paralysis in the House, which began more than 2 weeks ago when the hard right deposed Kevin McCarthy as Speaker. A Representative Bacon said, quote, we're going to get a Speaker who represents us all and has supporters who play by the rules. Their anger has slowly percolated over the course of the past month, beginning with the ouster of Mr. McCarthy at the hands of 8 far-right Republicans. It was exacerbated when Mr. Jordan offered only tepid backing for Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana, the number 2 Republican, after he won the party's nomination to succeed McCarthy. Mr. Jordan's allies refused to back Scalise, forcing him aside. Representative John Rutherford of Florida, a holdout, said, quote, he missed his moment of leadership when he failed Steve Scalise. That was pretty much everybody's opinion. And here's what's fascinating about this reversal. In January, the establishment said, listen up, pigs. Listen up, you vote pigs that go out and vote for us every time and we treat you like garbage. You're going to take McCarthy because he's the only one that's got the vote. So you better sit down, shut up. And the Freedom Caucus is going to give them the votes because the House needs a speaker. This is how it's always worked. And the voter said, okay, fine. We can't go without a speaker. Here we are all this time later. And by the way, McCarthy objectively failed. Their selection failed. He broke all his promises and he failed. He didn't deliver the Capitol tapes. He didn't deliver spending cuts. He didn't defund any executive branch appointees. He didn't impeach Biden. He didn't appoint a committee to investigate any of our enemies. He didn't issue any subpoenas. He didn't extract any concessions in the debt limit or in the omnibus bill. He failed. He failed. He broke his contract. He broke his promise. He got fired. They wanted to put up Scalise, who's the same, and he got shot down. Now that Jim Jordan's been put up with the backing of the Freedom Caucus, now the establishment folds their arm and says, no, we don't want Jim Jordan. We don't want Jim Jordan. He didn't vote for Scalise. He didn't make Scalise the speaker, so now we won't make him the speaker. Now, wait a second. Hang on just a minute. I thought that we had to have McCarthy because the House needs a speaker. It needs a speaker. So everyone's going to have to accept what the establishment wants because we can't go without a speaker. But now here we are, a year out from the election, and we're without a speaker, without one for 2 weeks. We may not have one until January. It may be indefinite. And now the same people that said back then that we had to take McCarthy because we just need a speaker, now they have the luxury of folding their arms and saying, no, we don't want Jim Jordan. Well, what happened? I thought we needed a speaker. Now they're comfortable hanging out. 2 weeks ago, they sided with the Democrats because they didn't want to shut down the government over immigration. They didn't want to refuse the government its appropriations out of protest so that the Democrats would give money for border security, because they said if the government shut down, it would cost us dearly in the next election. We can't have that. So, in other words, when McCarthy was the selection, it was dire. We needed a speaker. When it was the debt ceiling back in May and June, we can't allow the American government to default. We can't do it. You have to give a rotten deal to the Democrats that gives the Republicans no concessions because we just can't shut down the government. When in October it was the appropriations battle, they said we can't shut down the government. It's going to be too costly. It needs to stay open. But now that the Freedom Caucus is forcing Jim Jordan down their throats, they say, well, we don't need a speaker right now. We don't need a speaker. We can, well, he should have voted for Scalise when he had the chance. We won't vote for Jim Jordan. Oh, well, that's funny how that works, huh? So, in other words, all that urgency, all that pressure, which, by the way, this is the psychology of how the Republican Party abuses its voters. This is a psychology every time. When it comes to, for example, the Senate runoff in Georgia in 2020, they said, the voters need to hold the line. We don't care that the Republican nominees are crap. We don't care that they're corrupt. We don't care that they basically committed embezzlement because Kelly Loeffler was buying stocks or selling her stocks before they locked down the economy with COVID, so she's a criminal. They said, never mind that Loeffler and Perdue, the Republican nominees, are terrible. You have to vote for them. You need to, because otherwise the Democrats are going to take the Senate. And who knows what will happen? You have to vote for them. But they didn't vow to stop Joe Biden from stealing the election from Trump. They didn't bring that same ferocity. So we can lose the White House. That's fine. We don't need all hands on deck to stop the steal. We don't need all hands on deck to send a different slate of electors or to stop the certification of the election in the states where there was fraud. We don't need to do that. I mean, we lost the White House. What can you do? But you have to vote for Loeffler and Perdue, or else we're all going to die and Republicans have to win in the Senate. You have to hold your nose and vote for it anyway because the alternative's worse. It happens over and over and over again. And I have been a proponent for as long as I've been doing this show of just letting them lose. Let the Republican Party own the defeat. Don't vote for Loeffler and Perdue. Let them lose the Senate. Come up with better candidates next time. You want to win the Senate? You need to win Republican voters. You want to win Republican voters? You need to put up candidates that are good and not corrupt rhinos. Same thing with the speakership. You want the Freedom Caucus, which is elected by the strongest elements of the base, to vote for your speaker? Then you need to put up a good speaker that's going to do the job for the base, do the job for the party of American patriots. Same thing with the debt ceiling, same thing with the rest of it. If you want the debt ceiling to be raised, you need to give us something. If you want the government to stay open, you need to give us something. It's a representative government. Where are the people that represent us? Everyone else seems to be represented. Israel's represented. Saudi Arabia's represented. Ukraine's represented. The Democrats, the blacks, Hispanics, immigrants, asylum seekers, refugees, the trade interests, the Chamber of Commerce, they're all represented. But we're not. The people that voted for Trump somehow are not in that equation. They just got to shut up, sit down, go over there, and take these rotten deals. So I like it. And now you're forcing and you're seeing that these establishment guys are sitting out the vote. Now they're the ones letting the House go without a speaker. They won't even vote to let the interim speaker have enough power to do the job for the next few months. So who's really shutting down the government now? And apparently, it was never as urgent as they made it out to be. That was only a trick to get us to support the stuff that they wanted. So I just find that to be amazing. I'll also say this. Where are any of these congressmen on Israel and Palestine? I have to say, just as an aside, because I want to get into Israel-Palestine in a moment. But I also want to point out the fact that these Republicans in the House of Representatives, they fought tooth and nail against Matt Gaetz. They fought tooth and nail against any form of border security. They fought desperately to avert a government shutdown and do all these things. But when it comes to foreign aid for Ukraine, when it comes to Democrats getting some deal without border security, when it comes to this stuff, no fight. In other words, they'll fight the base harder than they'll fight the so-called opposition. They go out there and say over and over, you know, we're against Biden, we're against the Democrats, and so on. You know, like the rhetoric around 2020, they said, we have to hold the line. You can't vote for Democrats. We have to control the House. But as an example, in the case of the appropriations battle several weeks ago, Kevin McCarthy and over 100 Republicans, they would rather make a deal with the Democrats than make a deal with Matt Gaetz. What does that say? They'd rather make a deal with the Democrats in the debt ceiling and give Joe Biden unlimited spending until the end of his first term. They'd rather give the Senate and the White House a clean continuing resolution to avoid the government shutdown. They vote for those things. They'll hold their nose for that. They won't hold their nose for Jim Jordan. They won't hold their nose for Matt Gaetz. They won't hold their nose for HR 2 and mandatory E-Verify. And if that's the case, then those people deserve to be voted out. Those are not our friends. It's like we said all throughout this week. The most important thing is to identify who really is on our side and who's on the other side. If there are 100 Republicans in the conference, including McCarthy, during an unprecedented border crisis, which, by the way, has been sidelined in the news, you know, several weeks ago we were talking about it, and it was the biggest story in the country that New York City and Chicago and LA are overwhelmed with hundreds of thousands of illegals, that there's 12,000 crossing every day. And Joe Biden basically gave them, he might as well have given them permanent residency with this temporary protected status expansion. In the middle of that, they didn't want to give us border security. They would rather just give the Democrats a clean bill rather than duke it out with Matt Gaetz. If that's the case, then we should not have anyone like McCarthy as speaker ever again. It's better to not have a speaker than for it to be McCarthy. It's better to not have a Republican majority than to have a Republican majority that's doing this. How is that any different than the Democrats? The other angle is, and this is a little bit separate, but to get back to what I was saying a moment ago on Israel and Palestine, I'll never forget, and I brought it up when the speakership battle happened a couple weeks ago, I'll never forget when Paul Gosar's people told me that they had to throw me under the bus and lie because they had to live to fight another day. And I told the story a few weeks ago that we had a fundraiser set up and I was on the no-fly list. So I drove to Phoenix, Arizona from Chicago to do a fundraiser with them. And at the last minute, they chickened out because they were afraid of McCarthy and they were afraid of the media. And they went to the press and said, there's no fundraiser. I don't know what they're talking about. Nick Fuentes says they're doing a fundraiser with Gosar. That's a lie. That was never happening. And they lied. And I called them on the phone and I said, you know what? Just don't even put this stuff on the schedule then. I said, let's just drop it. Because you're making us both look like idiots. I said, you make you look like an idiot. You make me look like an idiot. I said, Gosar gets called a Nazi. And then when he goes and apologizes, nobody believes him. He says, oh, there was never going to be a fundraiser. Nobody believes that. I said, so he just looks like an asshole. I said, and then I drive all the way out here to do the fundraiser. I'm advertising it. And you pull out and say that I made it up. I said, no, you make me look like an asshole. I said, so let's just not play this game anymore. I said, It's better to just not even begin down the path if we're going to bail halfway there. It's better to just never even begin the process, because otherwise, without the execution, you get the worst of both sides of it. And he told me, you know, I know, but look, we just got to pick our battles. We got to live to fight another day. And, you know, here we have the situation in Israel and Palestine where we're going to be dragged into World War III like we've been talking about for the past week and a half, where we're threatening Iran and Hezbollah and Russia is threatening to blow us up in the Black Sea. And we're potentially going to be fighting Russia and China, this axis, on three fronts, on two continents. Where's Paul Gosar? Where's Paul Gosar? Where's Marjorie Greene? Where are these people? America first. Where are these America firsters? And, you know, there was a time when a lot of people were critical of me because they said, oh, you know, Paul Gosar and Marjorie Greene threw you under the bus. And, you know, that shows that you're not as politically efficacious as you might have been had you not said or done certain things. But it's obvious that they left the America First movement. I didn't leave the America First movement. I've been America First on everything that's happened. On the border, on McCarthy. Marjorie Greene whored out for McCarthy. Paul Gosar voted for him. He voted not to remove him. I've been America First on Israel-Palestine. I don't know where those two have been at. I think Marjorie Greene posted some glib tweet about Jewish space lasers. Get them, Netanyahu! Jewish space lasers or land Jewish lasers. Get them, Netanyahu. Show those radical Muslims what's up. You know, where's America? How's that America First? Huh, bitch? And that goes for both of them. It goes for both of them. Paul Gosar's hosting fundraisers with some Zio rabbi who's showing all the naive boomers a map of the Middle East, explaining why Israel's our closest geopolitical strategic ally. Really? So, you know, we're at this point now where it's like I said last night, you look across the board of everything in the conservative movement. What do you have, really? When push comes to shove and you really need an America First voice, I can count on one or two hands how many people have spoken out against war in this case that are not completely either they are Zionist Jewish spies or they're tied up with them. You know, I haven't heard anything from Green good. I haven't heard anything from Gosar that's been good. I haven't heard anything from Alex Jones, Charlie Kirk, Matt Walsh, any of them. And the other ones are all Jews, you know, Shapiro and Pollack and Prager and the rest of them, Mark Levin, Dave Rubin, you know, they're all in the pocket because they're spies. The only people that I've heard that have spoken out against the war in an America First way are Vivek, Tucker Carlson, and then our crew, you know, the people that we're sort of directly or indirectly connected to, Keith Woods, Elijah Schaefer, Isabel O'Reilly, Josiah Moody, Jake Shields, these guys, you know. Other than them, I don't see anybody. Oh, Lauren Chen, of course. I don't want to leave anybody out, but you know. And it goes to show there is a lot of stuff in the conservative movement that is not worth preserving. I think it's about every member of the House, minus like Gates. I think it's every member of the Senate. I think it's virtually everybody in the conservative commentary class, maybe with the exception of Tucker Carlson. And then it's all the presidential candidates, minus Trump and Vivek. So basically, when you look at the conservative political movement all together between the GOP, Fox News, DeSantis, the governors, the senators, the representatives, all of it. When you take all these people and all their money and all their influencers, between all of them, you got Gates, Trump, Vivek, Tucker. That's it. Those are the only four that have said boo about the fact that we're about to go to war with Russia, China, and Iran over Israel. Those are the only four that have even insinuated something. Vivek and Tucker had their interview and they said it's got to be America First. Trump called out Netanyahu. He did walk it back, but it is what it is. And Gates is busy leading the charge against McCarthy. That's it. Those are your, out of all, think of all the money. It's billions. And in terms of impressions on social media, it's billions. And we got four guys that are worth shit. Alex Jones is saying that Hamas hit the hospital and he supports Israel. Charlie Kirk, same thing. Charlie Kirk and all at Turning Point USA, same deal. Glenn Beck and all of Blaze Media, same thing. Fox News and New York Post, properties of Murdoch, same deal. All the other presidential candidates, and it's every member of the House that is going to vote for some resolution to give money to Israel, and all of them, with the exception of eight, are going to vote for McCarthy, who sides with the Democrats rather than immigration restrictionists. We got four. Everyone else can go. Everyone else is expendable. That's the way we got to look at it. Live to fight another day. Not a lot of fighting there, bud. Not a lot of fighting there. I don't see. When are we going to see some fighting? He's just getting older and older. There's no fight there. There's no fight left in him. He's ready to retire in this next cycle or the one after that, and then that's it. And you know what? I cannot wait to live the rest of my life making sure that his legacy is as a coward. Coward. Because I'm the young guy. I'm the guy who at 18 years old decided to give my life to the cause of America first. And they did nothing but rug pull and backstab on their way to retirement. So, you know, any cachet that that guy enjoyed, or Green for that matter too, as a result of their connection to me, because I bring the credibility of an authentic America First voice, I will make sure there is none of it. That's going to be the legacy of these types. Gotta live to fight another day. Yeah, more like live to suck another day. Live to suck balls. Not to be vulgar, but I mean literally. We gotta live to fight another day. Not doing a lot of fighting, doing a lot of playing with the balls. Let's just put it that way. Not to be too vulgar, but seriously. It makes me so mad when I think about that, because he was telling me, well, you know, Paul's under a lot of pressure. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can imagine. Must be real hard. I don't know what that's like. And I'm a quarter your age. Oh, well, he's just under a lot of pressure. I'm so sorry. We wouldn't expect anything from an elected representative. Yeah, go live to suck another day, bud. Anyway, so that's that. I want to move on. I want to get into the war in Gaza here. And like I said, there's not a lot of major developments because we're still waiting on this war to happen. So we'll just go briefly into the statement from Joe Biden. You might have caught it, but Joe Biden gave a presidential address from the Oval Office tonight. And it was really nothing of substance other than he pledged $100 billion in aid to Israel and Ukraine. And so we'll talk about that. I also want to get into the plans for a ground offensive, which could last years. So this is a story. It says, quote, President Biden pleaded with Americans on Thursday to stand firmly behind Israel and Ukraine, making an emphatic case in a primetime address that the United States remained a beacon to the world, whose leadership was vital to stopping the death and destruction by the enemies of democracy. Wow. After returning to Washington from a... And by the way, Putin and Hamas are going to destroy democracy. Meanwhile, Ukraine banned Eastern Orthodoxy today. They banned Christianity in Ukraine, and they banned opposition parties. But it's a battle for democracy. In Israel, they blew up the world's third oldest Christian church. And just months ago, Netanyahu was passing a judicial reform through the legislature that would turn the Israeli state into a Likud dictatorship. So yeah, it's all about democracy. Democracy is killing innocent Palestinians, banning Christianity, blowing up churches, banning opposition parties, rigging the courts to avoid persecution. Like, you know, the hypocrisy, it just stinks at this point. I know that's kind of a lame point, but it's just true. You know, We can't have democracy die. That's why we need to protect the Likud dictatorship. That's why, you know, that just doesn't make any sense. Anyway, he says we have to fight Ukraine, or rather we have to fight Russia and Hamas. They're the enemies of democracy. It says, after returning to Washington from a one-day visit to Israel following the Hamas terrorist attacks, Mr. Biden spoke from the Oval Office, arguing that providing military and economic aid to Israel and Ukraine was in the interest of global stability and American national security. He is expected to ask Congress for $14 billion in emergency assistance for Israel and $60 billion for Ukraine's war with Russia, according to people familiar with the administration's plans. So we're in something like $200 billion with Ukraine. $200 billion. That's in addition to the $800 billion that we spend on the military every year. That's a quarter of the annual American military budget that's gone to one country in the span of 18 months. $200 billion for Ukraine. And the $14 billion for Israel, you have to understand, this is just one. I was going to say this is for openers, but it's not even for openers. We have given Israel, since the creation of the State of Israel, some estimate $250 billion themselves. So Ukraine has received $200 billion. Israel has received something like $200 or $250 billion since Israel came into existence. And this is in the form of all kinds of things. Like, for example, President Barack Obama in 2015 passed the Memorandum of Understanding, which increased our annual aid to Israel from $3.5 to $3.8 billion for 10 years. So we're already paying them $3.8 billion every year. And that's just part of it. We give them aid in other forms. And some would argue that our continued presence in Iraq, Yemen, Syria, all these places, that is a form of aid. One could argue that our aid to Egypt and Jordan, which are in the top five recipients for American aid, one could argue that that's an extension of aid to Israel. So keep in mind that this $16 billion, this is on top of the hundreds of billions that we have given Israel. This is on top of the $10 million we give Israel every single day already. Do you understand that? We give Israel $10 million every day. Now they need an emergency $16 billion. We give them $3.8 billion, and now we need 4 years worth of that right away for an emergency. And it's like, what do they really need that money for? If we're giving them $3.8 billion per year, and they're a rich country, and they're armed to the teeth, why do they need that money? I think this is just an excuse for them to ask for more. This is just an excuse for them to shake down the United States for money. A crisis happens, give us your money. I don't know precisely what they'd even need it for. They say specifically they need to replenish the Iron Dome, and they need more missiles, and they need armored vehicles, and they need things like that. Okay. So one, the $16 billion is in addition to hundreds over years, the $3.8 billion we give them annually already. And we even gave them a little bit more at the end of the Trump administration for the Iron Dome. There was a year where we gave them $5 or $6 billion. But this is just for openers, just like with Ukraine. You understand how the Ukraine commitment is a rolling commitment? First, it's 10 here, it's 30 there, it's 60 here, okay? So Ukraine has been the recipient of nearly $200 billion. We want another $60 billion to fund Ukraine indefinitely, apparently. This is an indefinite commitment for years on end. And now we're going to give Israel a down payment of $16 billion, which is probably going to increase, and there will be more payments over time. This is also in addition to all the aid that we're giving to Taiwan. Because we're also giving Taiwan billions of dollars so that we can change the balance of power across the Taiwan Strait, and we can even it out a little bit, give them the defensive capabilities to offset China's offensive capabilities. So we're just a pay pig nation right now. That's what we are. It's unbelievable. Let's think about it from a few perspectives. One, the United States is completely bankrupt. The private and public debt of this country has never been higher. The deficits get higher every year. It's in the trillions. The debt is $30 trillion. The interest to service the debt is becoming a significant percentage of what we spend our tax revenue on. So the country's bankrupt. We already don't have money to pay for stuff. And we apparently don't have money for healthcare. We don't have money for infrastructure. We don't have money for manufacturing. We don't have money for anything. And the stuff that we do pay for, we have to borrow trillions every year. And we have to print money and inflate the currency, which is a form of a tax on everybody. And in the middle of that, we're going to create three dependents, giving an unprecedented level of aid to all three at the same time. Pouring hundreds of billions into Ukraine, hundreds of billions into Israel, and in the future, hundreds of billions into Taiwan in wars that variously may lose, may win. Ukraine's going to lose. Taiwan's going to lose. Israel's undoubtedly going to win with or without our help. And remember, the government has no money. This is all coming from you and me. So this is literally a slave nation, is one way to look at it. People like you and me, well, not quite like me because I do this show, but people like you go to work every day. You go to work, you get in your car, you drive down the highway in traffic, you stop in the office, or whatever it is. You go to work every day, day in, day out. This is your life of toil, and you pay your taxes like a good little goy. And you have to scrimp and save for vacations and recreation and things like that. But you got to give the government a quarter or a third of your money. And as time goes on, the government is just giving it away. They're giving it away to black people. They're giving it to immigrants. And then they're giving it away to fucking Israel. This is what they do. You go to work and understand what all of this really represents. The money's not even real at this point. The money represents productivity. It's not even about the money. It's about you working. You go to work to support this economy, and the economy works for them. You see? Because the money's fake. The fiat money is so inflated, and it's totally divorced from any objective measure of value. And they obscure how much of it there even is, or how it's created, or how it even enters the economy. So understand, you know, when you give money to the government, it doesn't matter. They just borrow what they don't need. And what they can't borrow, they print. So what this is really about is the fact that they need the lights to stay on. They need the trains to keep running, the trains and the planes and the cars, and they need the fuel to keep flowing, and they need everybody to keep consuming content and the grid to stay up and all this stuff. And what they're doing is they're taking value from the economy, taking money that you would have spent on Netflix, money that you would have spent on food. And a form of this is inflation. When they print money, they print it, they spend it on the stuff they want, and then it reflects in higher cost in goods. You can buy less with the money. So that's a form of taxation as well. It's a form of forced austerity. So they're effectively inflicting austerity on the workers. The workers go and work for what are, they're really more like, when we think about money, it's really more like a coupon. It's really more like a ticket. And so they're taking your tickets that you can spend on food and money, whatever. They're taking that so that you can't consume goods and services with it, so that that value can be redirected somewhere else. That's effectively what's going on. The reason I say that is because when you think too much in terms of money and numbers, it obscures the reality that it's value. What's really happening is they are diverting productivity and value away from this society. You see what I mean? You go to work and create value through productivity. You should be able to get value in return from that. For that, you work, you generate value. You should be able to get value in return. You should get the fruit of the productivity of the farmer or the grocery store by getting more food or getting a Netflix subscription, from the value from Hollywood and so on. When they tax you and they take money out of your paycheck, they're making it so that you can't you can't consume. They're making it so that it's a forced austerity. The workers that make stuff can't actually have anything because their money has to go to the government so the government can give it to migrants, so that the government can give it to black people. Because the black people consume without working. The immigrants consume without working. You see how that works? You go to work and make the economy run. Us white people, us stupid white people, go to work and we make stuff. We make stuff that makes the country run. We make the stuff that everybody needs. And then when we go home, we don't get the stuff that we need. Because the government takes our money and gives it to the people that don't make things so that they can consume the things they need. You can't eat everything that you want. You can't eat at a restaurant every night because that money has to be taken and given to black people in the form of food stamps so that they can go grocery shopping because they have no money because they don't generate value. Same thing with the refugees. The refugees come here, they don't speak English, they don't have education, they don't have skills, they don't have capital, they don't have houses, they don't have transportation, they don't have anything. Someone's got to pay for their kids to be in school. Who's going to pay their teachers to come into school and teach their kids, the kids that have no money, the kids of the parents that have no money? Well, the government's got to pay them and the teachers got to eat. So we got to take the money from the working people to give it to the teachers so they can give the education to the children of the migrants. And the same goes for the people building the migrant centers on the island in New York. The same goes for the people that are clearing out hotels and nursing homes for the migrants to stay in. And the same goes for the aircraft carriers that have to be deployed off the coast of Israel and for the people that build the missiles for Israel and the people that build the armored personnel carriers for Israel and the people that build the long-range missiles for Ukraine and so on and so forth. So the way to look at it is that this, when you think about $60 billion, $18 billion, whatever it is, they're taking from you to give to them. And the best part was Biden called it an investment. Does anybody believe that this will ever return any sort of, this is going to return dividends? This is an investment that is going to appreciate in value. It's going to pay us. Because I think the definition of an investment is that there is an intention to appreciate the value of the money that you put in. So if we put money into Ukraine, if the taxpayer puts their money in the government directs their money to Ukraine, the idea is that giving this money to Ukraine is going to somehow make it so that we derive more wealth in the future. But I don't see how that happens. How does giving Israel armored personnel carriers and missiles to kill innocent Muslims, how is that going to make us, they say, well, that's going to make us safer. It's going to make it so that we don't have to fight a costlier war over here. I'm sorry, was Hamas, were they planning on invading San Francisco next? I must have missed that part. And how are they going to do that? How extensive is this tunnel network? They say, we got to give Israel the missiles they need to fight them there. It's an investment in our security. We got to fight them there or else it'd be far more costlier. I'm sorry, were they going to dig a tunnel to Omaha, Nebraska? Were they going to dig a tunnel to Dallas, Texas? Was the United States next on their list? Because I'm pretty sure that Hamas and Hezbollah exist to destroy Israel, not the United States. And I'm pretty sure Israel is more than capable of fighting Hamas. Yet we have to give them the money. So this is, and by the way, not only is it directly taking money from you in the form of inflation and taxation, but all the money that the government is borrowing, they're borrowing against your kids. That's what that is. When the government borrows money, when the government sells debt and people buy it, and there's an expectation that we will pay the maturity of a bond when it expires, I don't know the technical language, you understand. When we pay back the money on the debt that we're putting out there, the expectation is that the government is going to take that money from you in the future. You realize that? When the government borrows money, it's not like we're not paying for it. We're just not paying for it right now. When the government borrows trillions of dollars so that we can give it to Israel or we can give it to Ukraine or give it to Taiwan or give it to black people or give it to refugees or migrants or Mexico. They're using what they take from you to pay for it, and the money that they borrow, they're taking money from you in the future. They're taking money that you don't have. They're taking money that your children don't have. Their expectation is that the country will continue to grow because you will keep having kids. Your kids are going to go to work. They're going to have kids. Those kids are going to work. And for generations, they will keep paying for Israel. They will keep paying the black people. They will keep paying the refugees and the illegal immigrants and the asylum seekers and Ukraine. They're selling all of us into slavery, and we have to accept less in the meantime. We can buy and consume less. We go to work for them. These black people that are killing, shooting, stealing, that are abusing white people all the time, we got to pay for them to eat. We have to go to work to pay for them to eat. These illegal immigrants that come here and stab and shoot and they take up space and they shit in the street and everything, we got to pay for their kids to go to school. Their kids that are going to grow up and be militant decolonizers opposing the white man and vote Democrat, we got to pay for them to go to school, and we got to pay for their hospital visits, and we have to pay for their Section 8 and their food stamps. And we have to bring in more and more immigrants to get more and more slave labor to pay for all this stuff. And in the process, we're going to lose our country. That's what's going on. So we need to stop the foreign aid. We got to cut the deficits. We got to cut the debt. We got to send all these people back. Every illegal immigrant, we got to send them back. We got to build the wall. We got to have our people having kids again. And we need to create an arrangement where the government can pay its obligations, and then what the American people make and what they produce, the value derives, or the value goes to them. I mean, that's the greatest injustice of all, is that we go to work all the time and we don't even work for ourselves. We work for other people. The productivity that we generate could pay for all of us to have a nice life, but it can't, because that productivity is paying for black people and immigrants to have a life. It's paying for Ukraine to have a life. It's paying for Mexico and Israel to have security. Well, I think they should work for their, if they want to have our stuff, they should buy it. If they want missiles, they should pay for it. Why don't they pay for it? They're a rich nation. All they do is tell us how smart they are, how smart and successful. Arabs bomb crap. Israelis build stuff. Here's an idea. Build a fucking job and pay for the missiles if you want them. Israelis build. Arabs bomb crap. Israelis are a beacon of light to the world. Okay, beacon of light. Why don't you be a beacon of money and give us money for the missiles then that you so desperately need? But they won't do that. And of course, you know, these magical black people that invented everything, again, invent some spare change. Invent some money so you can get some food, you know? And it goes on and on like that, but that's just the money. Here's the best part. This is going to go on for years, because the other part of the story, according to Axios, is that when Joe Biden was in Israel, their war cabinet told him that they need our support for years. They say that the war is going to go on for years. And this is the story from Axios. It says, quote, during the war cabinet's meeting with Biden, the Israeli defense minister Yoav Gallant stressed that it will be a long and difficult war and Israel will need U.S. support for a long period of time. An Israeli official said that Benny Gantz told Biden the effort to dismantle Hamas could take years. Israel and U.S. officials said that Biden didn't push back, but added that in order to maintain international support, Israel must address the humanitarian situation in Gaza. So, like I said, we've been supporting them forever. This $16 billion is just a taste. This is going to go on for years. We're going to be paying for it. We're going to be paying for them to blow up churches and hospitals and kill innocents and alienate them and all of us from the rest of the Muslims and drive them into the arms of Russia and China. Somebody said the other day, they said, oh, Egypt and Turkey are totally dependent on the American economy. There's no way that they're going to rally beside Iran against Israel. This has been going on forever. You have no idea, man. They're going to be killing Palestinians in a brutal war of ethnic cleansing for years. And it will change the landscape of the Middle East. It will absolutely change how things work. Saudi Arabia and Jordan and Egypt will not be stable if their governments carry on the same way that they were, as long as Israel is carrying on what it's doing right now. Things will change as a result of this, and not for the better. It's not going to be an investment that's going to pay us any dividends. It's going to be the opposite. Worst investment ever. I thought you Jews were supposed to be good with money. We keep giving you money and we never see any dividends. You know, the Jews, I thought they're supposed to be smart with money. Aren't we supposed to win with them? They're so smart and they're our betters and we're supposed to win by supporting them. Those that bless Israel will be blessed. Where's our dividends? Where's our blessings? They're getting blessed. Their Cash App's getting blessed all the time, all day. Israel's getting blessed with more American pay pig money. America just lines up and gives them the money. So Israel's getting blessed all day. No blessings for us, though. Our blessing is we get murdered by black people. Our blessing is that these smelly asylum seekers take over our neighborhood, shit in the living room of our childhood home. That's our blessing. The blessing of diversity. That is the blessing of diversity and the moral victory of helping God's chosen. Anyway, so that's that. I want to move on. I want to get into our super chats and see what you guys have to say about all this. Not cool, man. Give me my money. I want money too. Anyway, so let's take a look. We'll see what you guys have to say. Whoops. What the flip just happened? Am I still live? I'm getting some glitch here on my end. On my deal here, whatever. I don't know why it's doing this. Okay, anyway. How do I get rid of this? It's just open this window. I don't know how to get rid of this window. Whatever. All right. Let's see.
Jake sent $10. The best thing about a pet rabbit is when you're tired of him, you can roast him in the oven with some carrots and potatoes. I do not consent $10. I sure hope I don't get analyzed. Less than 3.
Okay, thanks.
Catholic Gooba sent $3. Hey Nick. There's a cute chubby Latina at this DLM church I recently started going to, and I kind of want to marry her. Any tips on how to riz her up? AF is inevitable.
Bait. That's very funny. Very funny bait attempt. Hilarious. Hilarious, man. So funny. You're so funny, dude. Hilarious. Latina, funny, TLM.
Zirkin sent $15. If Palestine's per capita GDP of $3,600 is 15 times less than Israel's per capita GDP of $58,000 and Israel's 10/7 is 15 times greater than America's 9/11, then what is Palestine's GDP times 9/11?
That's funny. Well done.
Jake sent $5. If you're allergic to your pet rabbit, you can roast him in the oven with 6 million potatoes and some juice. Tastes like chicken.
Okay, thanks. That's great.
Groip Soldier sent $30. Pretty crazy that Jewish people are sort of central to the plot of both World War II and now World War III. Crazy coincidence.
And World War I, don't forget.
Richard Percival sent $3. Praying for all the Christians killed by the Zionist regime. Thankfully they'll answer for their crimes one day, in this life or the next.
Yep.
Richard Percival sent $3. It's always great to see Groiper swarm some dumb Twitter Jew trying to slander you.
Yeah, I love to see it.
Adrian Blair sent $3. King, the reports are showing that they are targeting Ellen Knight with John Cena in his corner against Roman Reigns at Survivor Series. Do you see LA Knight possibly dethroning the tribal chief?
I don't know. I'm not watching WWE these days.
Buff Incel sent $10. Grew up with dogs and rabbits. Parents have rabbits still. Very good pet. Just takes time for them to trust you. Only negatives are they need room to run around and they chew on wires slash cords.
I got a rabbit proof my house then, maybe.
Pretty underscore fly underscore white underscore guy sent $3. 257. I feel like Destiny chooses his opinion just to disagree with you now.
Yeah, he's the ultimate contrarian. Oh, that's where that window was. That window was here. Okay, no wonder. Where was it originally? Where the flip was it? I think it was there. Anyway, all right, okay. Yeah, he's the contrarian again.
The unknown soldier sent $3. Would you marry a Spanish, Greek, or Lebanese woman if they looked close enough to what you want, or are you only interested in Italians?
I don't want to talk about this. This is a gay conversation. Faggot.
The fifth ninja sent $3. I tried to get a discount for the Alex Jones turmeric and two Jews shot me in the kneecap.
Great.
Incel Leo Messi sent $3. I'm so glad we don't have to hear or maybe someone who hasn't announced yet like we didn't know who you were talking about, nigga. Also fuck Kanye for betraying you. What a nigger. Why would he rehire Milo?
Okay, not reacting to that.
Wow, Fi sent $7. Can you please collab with Carlin Borisenko? It would so awesome. Carlin Borisenko said she couldn't ask because it was man's work. 07 and God bless.
Yeah, maybe.
Natsuk Greekoid sent $3. Love your enemies, but only your personal enemies, not the enemies of God. Saint Theodosius of Kiev.
True.
Ari sent $3. Do you feel like people never give you the benefit of the doubt when you make a mistake because they believe you're a genius and so everything you say and do must have been calculated?
Not really. No, I don't think about that.
Black Groiper sent $3. You are so fine.
Thanks.
Mark S. sent $3. Hey Nick, first time donating. Just wanted to say you are so awesome.
Thank you.
Fred Durst sent $5. Nick, I've upped my $3 to $5 seen as you roasted me for sending $3 last week. I also got my boy watching your show. We Aussies love you.
Hey, thank you. Yeah, I love Australia.
Greek Ortho Bro sent $3. The Orthodox Church has been banned in Ukraine. I fear the persecution of the faithful of Ukraine shall increase even more. Praying God has mercy on the persecuted Ukrainian Christians. Evil times.
Yeah, very much so.
Greek Ortho Bro.
It's a duplicate. Yeah, no, I agree.
Mo Money sent $50. Everyone needs to use this atrocity as an opportunity to red pill as many people as possible on the JQ. Even some boomers are finally starting to get it. W. Nick Fuentes. W. Hitler. W. Putin.
Yeah, some of the boomers are starting to get it. It's but you'd be surprised. A lot of people are stuck in their ways, but this is the battle, man. This is the flashpoint where we got to make the case to people. And, you know, we're not going to wake everybody up, but hopefully a lot of people start to see what's going on.
Soryok Party sent $3. Do you have any knowledge or thoughts on Lee Kuan Yew / Singaporean policies that made it what it is today? Something that notes should be taken from, or the wrong approach for other countries?
I don't know too much about it other than he controlled immigration to freeze the ethnic composition of the country and had authoritarian social policies. I haven't read too much into the Singapore example, but yeah, I think all of that is good.
Gaim Stein Nosenberg sent $3. If you marry a non-resident alien, you can gift her the untaxed gift limit, delta $120K of assets at the cost basis per year, and she doesn't have to file with the IRS. You can't live in the U.S. though.
Why would, what's the benefit for me? Why would I want to gift her money? She doesn't have to file with the IRS, so what? I mean, don't I have to pay, I earned the money, I still have to pay taxes on it. I don't get to, you know, do you get to write off gifts on your taxes? I don't think so. So, yeah, I don't understand what the benefit to me would be.
Boogly Woogly sent $7. I hate to say it, but you watch Vivek on Tucker talk about America First and contrast that with Trump endlessly re-truth Mark Levin, makes one really wonder, who is going to be more receptive to us?
Vivek is weak. That's the difference. Who is going to be more receptive to us? You're right. We should vote for Vivek. He's not going to win, dude. He can't even handle Nikki Haley. You think he can handle anything? He's going to stand up to Jewish power. He can't even stand up to Tim Scott, who's a gay black guy. He's going to stand up to Netanyahu, who's fucking killed people. But Tim Scott is bitch slapping him on the stage. Tim Scott is a gay man. And he's black. He's like a soft gay black guy. And we're going to vote for Vivek. Vivek got bitched out by Nikki Haley and Tim Scott. But yeah, he's going to stand up to Netanyahu. He's going to say, listen here, Netanyahu. It's America first. And Netanyahu is just going to like put a loaded gun in his mouth and say, what did you say? He's literally going to put a loaded gun in his mouth. And then he's going to start crying. Vivek's going to start crying. So no, you just, dude, what's the insinuation? I understand the frustration with Trump. I get it. But what you're saying is ridiculous. Vivek is not viable at all. He's not viable as a nominee. He's not viable in both ways. I mean, he's not viable to win the nomination. He's not viable to win the general. And even if he won the general, there's no way he would stand up to any of these political problems. He's a weak man. I mean, I like him. I think he's a good talker. But I mean, when he went on that debate stage, two times he proved that he's got no balls. Like, I like him. And I don't say that to be a jerk, but he handled those situations all wrong. He can't handle confrontation. So it's all fun when you're just smiling and goofing around on the campaign trail. And, you know, some like libtard is yelling outside and you're like, here, let me pick up your water bottle for you. It's another thing when you're on the debate stage with killers who want to be president and they just yell in your face. And all he could do is like grin like an idiot and take it. It's weakness. He's weak. So he's weak. He's not viable. He's not going to beat Trump.
I wonder who's going to be more. Oh, you're right. You're right. I think we're going to vote for Vivek.
And like what? Waste time? Like, don't be ridiculous. I get the frustration, but let's just not say something totally retarded because we're frustrated.
Nathaniel Hull sent $20. Hey Nick, you are the most critical voice in the world. Love your expositions on money, productivity, industry. One of the better definitions I've heard was money equals biosurvival tickets.
Well, that's not even really my idea. I appreciate that. I forget the name for it, but there's an economic theory that says that basically at a certain point in capitalism, it's a voucher system. That money becomes the equivalent of a voucher. And you know, the money no longer even reflects value necessarily. It's just a voucher that's distributed by large firms and the state for people to consume. And it's effectively a way of managing resources. And, you know, I haven't read the book on that, but I heard that. And, you know, it makes sense because when you strip away these things that are conceptual, and you talk about them in terms of things that are practical and real, you realize that that is sort of what it is. Because the money is in no way real. Like, the money is imaginary at this point. Because of fractional reserve banking, so much of the money is theoretical. It's never been printed. And it's created in the forms of these of debt that is being given out. And so money as a concept has become completely abstract. And so it really just reflects, and I guess it's not a groundbreaking take to say that it reflects relative scarcity. But when you think about money in terms of not like, oh, you know, prices are this and wages are this and so on, it's really more like we work, we generate value, and then we can consume value. And, you know, I'm trying to get people to think about what the economy really is as opposed to how it's talked about. People talk about it in these ways and it becomes like a completely hypothetical category of knowledge when in reality we're talking about the management of resources. know, that's the definition of the economy, is that there are scarce resources and they can only be used in so many ways. You know, not everybody can have everything that they want. Not everybody can consume a limitless amount. So we need to introduce a system that is going to regulate where these resources are going towards, you know, who's going to get them and for what purpose. And we have the price system, which is supposed to regulate that. But when you have these massive firms, and when you have the Federal Reserve manipulating prices, and when you have the government being such a huge employer and being one of the biggest spenders in the economy, one of the biggest engines of spending, it sort of becomes a different situation. So anyway, so that's not entirely my idea, but I appreciate it.
Walk and Chew sent $3. Most racist races?
Seriously, just shut up. Most racist races? What's the point of this question? Jews are the most racist race because they hate everyone other than themselves. But I don't know who else. Asians, what is this supposed to be? A prompt for some playful discussion? Eat shit.
Slop Trader sent $5. Glenn Greenwald was going in on the JQ today on Dave Smith's podcast.
Really?
It's a white pill seeing the topic come out of the fringe lately. Thanks for all of the great shows.
Maybe I'll watch that then. I like Dave Smith. And Glenn Greenwald is not terrible. I mean, you know my feelings about him. But he's not terrible.
Beards and Beardsley sent $5. How do you send a super chat through Cozy? Sorry if you addressed this before. I just can't find it.
I just forget it. Okay.
Caesar says sent $3. Taylor Swift, hot or not?
She's hot.
Slop Trader sent $5.
That's a duplicate.
Valley Zoomer sent $100.
Hey, thank you very much for the big super chat. I appreciate it. Valley Zoomer. Valley Zoomer always coming in hot with the big super chat. Big shout out. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, man. And no message, even better. Excuse me, no message. That's what I like to see. So, hey, thank you very much, buddy. God bless. 07's a Valley Zoomer.
Boogly Woogly sent $5. So is IMEX still happening? Will the Muslim militants let it happen? Israel cementing itself as a critical economic hub isn't good for non-Zionists.
It's on ice for now and probably for the foreseeable future. As long as this conflict is going on, it's hard to see how it resumes. You know, you have a way of asking the dumbest questions. Do you know that? Because the questions you ask are like crystal ball questions. They're not questions about like understanding. It's questions about like, hey, what will people do in the future? It's not like, you never ask a question that's like, you know, explain this, you know, what do you think about that? How likely is it this? It's always like, what, hey, are we going to make it? What will happen in the future? You know, I don't know. I don't know what will happen in the future. As far as this economic corridor, it's obviously on hold for now. You know, Saudi Arabia has bowed out of the talks for the time being. I don't know how we're giving Saudi Arabia a security guarantee while they're talking to Iran and while they're condemning Israel for this incursion in Gaza. So, you know, predictably, it's probably, and even just with the instability, it's probably not going to happen. And if this year, if this war goes on for years, like the defense minister said, maybe it never happens. I don't know. Does it happen when the war is over? It depends on how badly damaged Arab-Israeli relations are and Arab-American relations. We don't know what that's, but we don't know yet. You know, we don't know what this war is going to look like. We don't know how long it's going to be. We don't know how many casualties there will be. We don't know, again, if there's going to be escalation or widening. You know, so there's too many variables here. I don't know what the future holds. I don't know what Israel's going to do. And what the, you know, if Hezbollah will be able to control itself. And, you know, I don't know what the future holds. But obviously, as long as the Gaza war is going on, there will be no corridor, for sure. I mean, that's my prediction. And it's hard to say if there would be anything after the war is over. You know, again, it depends on how badly damaged those relations are. And because if this is a years-long war and Saudi Arabia continues to drift away and de-dollarization continues and Egypt and Saudi Arabia explore BRICS, you know, maybe within a few years they're closer to Beijing than they are to Washington and they scrap the deal, you know? So, I have no idea.
Slop Trader sent $5.
Okay, yeah, that's the third time.
Natsuk Greekoid sent $3. Natsuk Greekoid sent $10,000.
Hilarious. Good one.
Joey Batts sent $3. Heard a theory today from ex-Intel officer that Israel is actually scared of Hamas. That's why they don't want to invade Gaza. IDF is tough only when they're bombing kids and beating up 15-year-olds.
Yeah, possible. I believe it. That's going to be a tough war.
Simon Skula sent $5. These super chats fucking suck tonight. Holy shit.
Painful. Painful super chats tonight. Absolutely painful. I don't know why you're doing this to me. You're doing this to me. You're inflicting this on me. Not you, Simon. You're always good. You're always a star. But these other ones are killing me tonight.
4chan underscore growiper sent $3. The super chats have fallen. Millions must send $3 super chats with no message. Billions even.
Good. Nice. Yeah, that's great. Wow, dude. This is just, these are hitting. These are hitting tonight. I don't know. Someone turned it on. We're all dialed in, and this is great content tonight. Real laugh factory.
Gersh sent $3. Hey, how about those super chats?
Nice.
Black Growiper sent $3. The pumpkin is kinda spinning.
Is it?
Groip Polak sent $5. Anonymous Twitter clone fist similar to Yik Yak has thousands of young college students' attention right now at my uni. I want to spread your content to Red Pill with good optics in mind. Do you avow?
Yeah, but only if you do a good job. If you do a bad job, then no. I remember one time somebody printed out business cards for me, and they were handing them, without telling me, some fan, and they were handing them out at Stop the Steal, and they had like typos all over them. They looked like shit and they had typos everywhere. I was like, oh my gosh, people are going to think I made these. Some guy took it upon himself, you know, and it's a nice gesture, I guess. He wanted to help, but he printed out all these business cards with these like spelling mistakes. And I remember people were showing them to me and saying, hey, someone handed me this business card. I'm like, these aren't mine though. And it made me look like an idiot. So you got to do a good job.
Kathy Zhu sent 3美元. Hey Nick, how come you don't post a much on your Truth Social? Love the show, Ochi.
Because Truth Social, the engagement's terrible. And there's no content there. Nobody's there.
Justin sent $3. Chris Brown to do a dance-off with Israelis for a ceasefire.
Yeah.
Gaim Stein Nosenberg sent $3. The benefit of gifting your wife is that if you can avoid all capital gains tax. There are also legal and accounting tricks you can do to convert most non-wage cuck income into capital gains.
So if you give your assets, but then doesn't the wife have to pay the capital gains? That doesn't even make any sense. Does that work? At what point do you transfer the assets? So let's say I buy $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. It appreciates. I give the Bitcoin to my wife. She sells it. Oh, yeah, you know what? They would tax it. Yeah, they would. Yeah, you know, you're right. They wouldn't tax it at the point, the price point that I bought it at. They would tax it based on the value when it was received, right? The value when you receive the gift, I'm pretty sure. So it would be as if the capital gain didn't occur. It'd be like the capital gain vanished. But then again, why would I trust, why would it be a woman? Why would it have to be a woman? Why couldn't it be just anybody? And why would I trust an illegal alien anyway? That doesn't even, so that's your flaw here. Why do I need to marry a woman to do that? Wouldn't I just find a trusted black person or something? Trusted, you know, foreign national? But then I'm pretty sure that's just money laundering. So he got some flaws here. He got some holes. I don't know if that's going to work.
Trombone Zoomer sent $3. Have another almond joy on me.
Thanks.
Love you, Nick.
Wow, thank you. Love you too.
The Fifth Ninja sent $3. Can you explain the 4chan prophecy?
Look, if you don't get it, you just don't get it, okay? Can you explain it to me? I'm a baby. I'm a baby. Can you explain that to me? You posted something I didn't quite understand. Could you explain it to me? Can you shut the fuck up, you stupid idiot, and just shut up? Why don't you go use the internet, okay? Google, ever heard of it? You know, you people are helpless. You're like little children. You need me to wipe your ass, too?
Corlick sent $5. Greater than start World War III, greater than get $100 billion.
Yeah, that's their reward. Start a world war, get paid.
Jay Malarkey sent $3. Gave today's 100 to Ryan Dawson.
Damn. Well, you know what he's going to use it for. He's going to use it for more rockets. For more terrorist attacks.
Poo Vibe sent $3. Hey, Nick. I just took a shit and the water hit my balls. Thoughts?
Great.
Virginian sent $3. Obligatory super chat with no message to lessen Nick's pain.
Okay, but this is okay, but this isn't a super chat with no message. What?
While ironically driving Nick closer to insanity and making his pain worse. 07 Nick, God bless.
Now it would be better with no message. You didn't send a message with no message.
Pazios sent $3. When does a joke become a dad joke? When it becomes apparent. Light.1 sent $20. Oh wow. Your show is so awesome.
Thanks.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Fred Durst sent $3. Nick, what is your favorite Limp Bizkit song? It's My Way, It's My Way, It's My Way or The Highway?
I don't know that one. I don't listen to Limp Bizkit, so I don't know.
Greek Ortho Bro sent $3. How was the IDF able to quickly intercept audio recordings of Hamas confirming it was an errant Hamas rocket that hit the hospital, and yet was somehow unable to intercept anything of years of terror?
That's so weird. Yeah, wow. You really did something there. Bro thought he cooked.
Nationalist Action sent $3. Turkey seems like a big wild card in this conflict. Funny they are a NATO member too.
Yeah, huge wild card. They're a wild card in the whole thing. They're a wild card in the this entire battle between China and the United States. Because they've been teetering. They've been teetering on the edge for a while now.
Natsuk Greekoid sent $3. Money.
Refreshing, thank you.
Christ is Kingo 7 sent $10. God bless you, Nick. What is your opinion on the Arab Baath Party that was in Iraq and currently in Syria?
I don't really have strong feelings on it.
Gaim Stein Nosenberg sent $3. No, they would not tax it at all. Because your wife is not under the jurisdiction of the IRS if she is not a resident or citizen.
Yeah, but that kind of defeats the whole purpose, because then it's not my money anymore.
Gersh sent $3. Imagine if the super chats were even worse and there were more of them, that would be not good.
Yeah, good point. Okay, I'm going to look here on Cozy. Milk Tea Groiper says, good night. Hey, thanks, good night. King B says, thank you for everything you do. I was raised in one of the largest Zionist churches. Thank you for bullying me into the true church. Hey, glad to hear you finally made it. Okay, that's our last super chat. Damn, that sucked. That was tough. Oh, man. Yeah. Okay. That's gonna do it for me tonight. As always, remember to follow me here on Cozy and Rumble. Smash the follow button to get a push notification whenever I go live. Follow me on Telegram as well. I'm on the air Monday through Friday around 10 o'clock. It's slipping again. Around 10 o'clock Central every night. As always, thank you to our super chatters, especially Valley Zoomer. Thanks to everybody that super chats and watches the show. We love you, and I'll see you tomorrow. Until then, have a great rest of your evening.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo. It's going to be only America first. America first. The American people will come first once again.